Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast, the podcast where we discuss the world of publishing and, more importantly, the people who tend to make it happen. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got good taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. Yes, that's Sam Witwer. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit www.samwitwer.com. Check it out if you haven't. It's really great stuff. Today we're talking to Tom Holler, who is an editor for Delray Books, their Star Wars library. We're going to be talking about the just-announced From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Now, it's very early, too early to talk details, so Tom and I spend our time talking process and authors. And when you put 40 authors together telling 40 different short stories, well, it's a lot of work from a lot of people, so it's a more than worthwhile discussion. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. With me today, we've got editor Maximus Supreme and all-around good guy, New Yorker, Tom Holler from Delray Books. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I have to get my business cards updated now, apparently.
Okay, yes.
That's a better title.
That is a good title, yes. And I think actually since the last time we spoke, I don't know, when did you go, you got the promotion? When was that? Like you're now...
So I'm now editor, which It takes a long time in publishing for you to get to the point where you are an editor with nothing, no prefix, no suffix, nothing before or after, just the word editor.
Right.
That happens basically as of January.
Okay. So yeah. So it was after we spoke last time. Okay. Well then congratulations.
Thanks.
That's a huge, huge step and a huge honor. And knowing a couple other people that work there, you're in good company, and I'm sure they're very excited that, and obviously you do good work, otherwise they wouldn't keep you around, right?
Yeah, that's what I cling to.
Or you're that guy that brings in office treats all the time or something, I don't know. But.
I'm not that guy, so it might be the other thing.
tough to avoid, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in the world right now, and this isn't a political show, obviously, but I'm always kind of curious how people are handling different situations. And a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. How are you doing? I mean, you work so much from home anyways, because I know like when you're really busy, you're just working a lot beyond regular banker's hours. But are you feeling cooped up? Are you ready to go back to the office? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You're right. As an editor, I actually tend to work outside the office quite a bit, even under normal circumstances, because, you know, I don't really need a whole lot of very specific environments or technologies to sit down and like read a manuscript or type out a editorial letter to an author or, you know, look over a finished book or something like that. So it's pretty normal for my schedule to actually work outside of the office, work from home here and there. If I was traveling for other things, like fit work time into those things. So I don't feel too cooped up at home. I actually kind of I prefer to be at home a lot. Not the type of person who's like super outdoorsy. So having to be at home hasn't been as much of a stressor as it might be for some other folks, though certainly the chance to at least get out and walk around a little bit more and go for a walk towards the park or something like that or around my neighborhood has been a bit of a balm. But I'm not necessarily in any rush to get back to an office because that involves not really just the office part, which obviously comes with all of its own challenges, but that involves me having to become more of a regular on public transportation in New York again. And I'm not an essential person to be needing to do that. There are so many more people who do need to do that. And I'm not helping by taking up space in those environments. And I'm not helping by putting those people who already have to put themselves at risk to do really essential work more at risk. So it's actually better that I'm at home and I'm comfortable and happy to do that until such a time where it's not necessary.
Sure. I think I'm at the point now where like, I was telling people, sadly, the pandemic didn't really cramp my style that much. I'm like you, I don't really go out that much, but I think it's starting now, especially maybe with the nice weather, like you said, just to be able to go outside, go for a walk. Like I live sort of in a beach town, just to be able to go to the beach would be nice, but we're getting there. One thing I do know that you do like to do very much, and I know, you know, I'm sure you're in love with your safety and the safety of your family, and that would trump, that's a terrible word, and that will take precedence above anything else, but I know you love conventions.
I did.
How are you feeling about the latest round of cancellations, and how are you feeling about sort of, you know, we're moving into really making use of the technology. We've got digital stuff that's already happened, and I know there's at least one Lucasfilm publishing panel for San Diego, and I saw you and Elizabeth there a few weeks ago do your thing. How are you feeling about the loss of conventions, and how are you feeling about moving into the digital sort of side of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on one hand, it's impossible not to be a little bit bummed about the loss of conventions. My coworkers and I talk about that. Like, the last quote unquote normal thing we all did was actually we were at C2E2 in very early March in Chicago. And that was kind of the last thing we all did, because we all got back to the office. And about a week later is when it really was like, all right, everyone work from home. We'll see you when we see you. And it's funny because we all we reminisce about when we were at C2E2, we all thought like the best health precautions we should be taking was like, hey, no high fives and just some extra Purell and we'll all be good. how naive we were. So, you know, on the one hand, it's hard not to feel bummed because of what you lose at a convention. And I don't mean like, oh, you lose getting to buy all the cool stuff and see the cool trailers and things like that. It's just, you lose that bit of community that, try as you might to create a digital environment to replicate that, it's not going to ever be exactly the same. So, for example, the two things that I'm like most bummed about writ large with conventions is, one of my favorite things to do at conventions is always the place where I would meet folks who were new to a particular fandom or new to a community. It was like their first time. They obviously, you know, were like a Star Wars fan or have been a Star Wars fan for a long time, but this is maybe the first time they've ever gone to a convention and interacted with like the Star Wars community in a convention setting. So it would be a big moment, and it's kind of another chance for you to kind of metaphorically sort of embrace someone and say, hey, you know, it's really great that you're like joining the larger community and getting involved, whether that's like people getting to the podcast stage at a celebration or the fan stage to have fan panels, or coming to kind of like the ad hoc fan meetups and someone who's like, hey, this is my first time at a convention. I'm just so excited to meet more people who love the thing that I love, and getting to like make those initial interactions with folks and meet them is great. That's the thing that I think I'm going to miss the most, because it's harder to do that in a virtual environment. You can still try to do that, but you know, it's hard. You know, you think about just like if you're kind of new to Twitter and trying to get into one of the fan communities on Twitter, like you sort of make your way in and you sort of following hashtags and you join conversation stuff, but it's just, there's always that small amount of block there with a virtual environment. So that's probably the thing that I'm bummed and missed the most. On the other side of that, I mean, right, I think it is 100% the right thing that every convention should just be canceled. And every single one that does, I'm excited for that, because you know what, as you mentioned with some of the stuff that we've done and some of the things that conventions are trying, running a virtual convention is entirely possible. I mean, we see it yearly with like all the video game stuff, you know, it's like all the E3 stuff, which for many years was almost semi-virtual because they didn't really let consumers there. Like you can do you can do 90% of what you would do at San Diego Comic-Con online. Mm-hmm. The part you miss is the community part. And, you know, I'm hopeful that there'll be some like community driven events and things like that. Maybe people will figure out ways to organize them that you could sort of create those moments to celebrate the communal aspect of it. But the parts that I'm bummed out missing do not overwhelm the fact that it is absolutely the right decision to make for the safety of everyone who would be attending, all the people who have to work conventions, all the people who have to organize them, the people who help manage the buildings. I mean, you have been to conventions like me, you know that con crud, even when there is not a global pandemic, like is a real thing that you can get floored by. And so to imagine that that is not a risk when there's also all of these other things going on, it's just the right thing to do.
It's absolutely the right call. And, you know, yeah, to your point, I was just talking to EK there a couple of weeks ago, and we both agreed that like the thought of being at a convention right now kind of just scares the crap out of us. And like, you know, I'm at just right now, it just doesn't feel like we're ever going to be doing it ever again. I mean, I realize we will eventually, but it just doesn't feel like it. Feels so far away at this point. But you're right. I do think so much can be done online. One of the nice things I like about what's happening digitally is that it does allow a lot of people, you know, to sort of participate internationally that maybe couldn't before. So that part of it for sure. I think is really a huge benefit. I mean, listen, there's some things you could just never replicate. The feeling in a room when an announcement is made and you're sharing it with hundreds, thousands of people or whatever. But, you know, it's like, that's the one thing I don't see anyone, I haven't seen anyone complain about these things being canceled. Maybe you have, I haven't seen anybody online.
No, certainly, certainly any of the complaints are like the, I'm bummed I'm not going to see these people. I only see a convention. So, you know, it's that like,
right.
It's the right thing to do, but I'm right. Also bummed. And you can, you know, you can exist in both of those places at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, who knows, one day, I know New York hasn't canceled yet, but I mean, that's just a given, given what's going on there. Is Javits still a field hospital?
I don't know for sure. I think it still is. I think it's not entirely, I don't think it's like an in-use field hospital at the moment. I may be wrong. So people listen to this, like, please absolutely fact check me.
Oh, this is, please don't come to us for
I think it may still be structured that way, but I don't think it's in use, but I think it's still structured that way such that obviously if there ended up being another, you know, massive swell in folks who needed hospitalization or needed additional medical aid that the hospitals weren't able to fill, that they already have this environment set up.
Sure.
I think that's still the case though. Again, I don't know. And I don't know how long that would have been planned for. So yeah, I just cannot imagine it's going to happen. I think it's just one of those rolling things, and eventually I think it's going to happen. I think it's almost inevitable.
Yeah. Same with Celebration. I don't think anyone really thought it was going to happen. It was just like, there's so much to deal with these conventions, right? With contracts and vendors and whatnots and insurance. And it's not something they can just make willy nilly. Right. So, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what San Diego does. And that, I think in a lot of ways, is going to be a good sort of bellwether to what happens going forward with some of the other bigger conventions. And if Celebration does do something digitally, and I'm not worried at all, because that team, that digital side of Lucasfilm, is they're award-winning. So like, they're going to be fine, right? They're going to put something together and it's going to be fantastic. So I have no doubt about that. But it's not really why I asked you to talk to me today, but I wanted to talk to you about it just because I know, you know, that's a big part of what you do personally. And I know you enjoy I know one of your biggest thrills is getting there and meeting people and talking to people about books and Star Wars, and while, like you said, you can still do that, it's just a little bit different. But we are here to talk about a fairly big announcement that was made. What's today?
Today is Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Sort of a teaser was dropped there on last Thursday, and then I guess made even more official yesterday. On Monday. So what we're talking about, of course, is the, from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back. I want to see, I'll get you on the record right now, and you can reveal who the 40th author is. Are you prepared to do that, Tom?
Not quite yet. We'll get there. There's a final cover that's got to come out, and we'll obviously have author names on the cover, but it'll happen.
I don't know if you saw or heard about a person did drop something on Twitter and then immediately delete it, but it was, of course, too late. So we think we have a pretty good idea who it is, but unless you guys are just pulling a big scam on Twitter now, I doubt that. But we think we got a pretty good idea who it is, and like the other 39 names, it's a pretty incredible list of authors. So one of the big things, obviously, we're so early in the announcement, and we can't talk about story details or even story titles yet, other than the 6 that were released yesterday on StarWars.com. So let's just talk about process.
Sure.
Because this is huge. I mean, yes, they're short stories, but I don't care. You put 40 of them together, and they all have to be unique and different. It's an incredible process to go through. So one of the things I wanted, and I assume it's sort of, this is one of those things, what was your involvement with the first one? I don't even know.
Oh, I mean, I was,
were you, you know,
these things, as we will talk about, are all hands on deck projects.
Yeah. No, I realize that. Yeah, for sure. But I'm just sort of, what was your, were you in the mix? God, I can't remember.
2017.
Yeah.
So, yes. Oh, definitely.
The only reason I ask that is, so like, you've gone from this one to this one now. So to me, I assume this is a process that is probably just ongoing. Now, obviously, you are getting diverted to more immediate titles that are coming out sooner or later, whatever. But this, to me, anytime you're putting together 40 authors and 40 different stories, you're probably always on the lookout for authors. You and the team, you're always mindful of ones you hear about from other people, recommendations. But when did you actually start, like, sit down, maybe have like a formal meeting and start to put some energy, real energy, into this from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back?
Pretty much the moment so this is going to be slightly coy, but pretty much the moment we published the first one, if okay. only because we had so much fun, as crazy, like this is, I think I've categorized this before. This is the best bad idea we've ever had. Like, it's a bad idea. Like, we're going to do 40 stories from 40 different perspectives, and it's going to retell. It's like, it's a bad idea just because of how crazy it kind of ends up being logistically. But it's also the most fun that we have, like some of the most fun that we have. And it's also crucially important, as I'll explain in a little bit. So really, the moment we were done with the first one, we all enjoyed it so much that we were like, oh, we really should do it. We really wanted to and really knew that we wanted to. And we're pretty sure we were going to. But so we had already had like some list of some authors who we had thought about for the first book or reached out to. And, you know, because of the complexities of the project and because of the logistics involved and a bunch of other factors, you know, like people can't always contribute. It might not be the right time. They may have a bunch of other things going on for any number of reasons. So there were some people who we were like, you know, all right, second time around, we're going to ask them, or people who we had thought about, like, but we already had our 40 authors for the first book. So we're like, oh man, someone who, you know, a new author was like just introduced to us, or someone's like, hey, I just read this book by this author I hadn't heard of before. Oh my gosh, we totally need to get them. So in terms of the list building and thinking about who did we want to try to get to do this project, that started basically as soon as the first one was done. And it's just part of that rolling process of, you know, we're all always looking for new voices for Star Wars, and we're always reading stuff and watching things and talking to people who might have an interest in Star Wars and keeping lists and ideas for people, because we're always looking to find someone that we can match to projects that we know they'll succeed in, or puts them in a best position to succeed, that they're going to have a great time with. So it's just like an add-on to that overall rolling process that we use for all the things we do. But it was a bit further down the line where we said, okay, this is happening. And then you actually have to start doing the real work of reaching out to authors, figuring out lists, figuring out who you want to reach out to, breaking down the film and making sure, like, is this possible? And like, what are the things we got to think about as we go into this? Because Empire Strikes Back is a really different film from it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a weird film. And it is actually a film that is probably not well suited for a project like this. And I will tell you why. Because for a good portion of that movie, there are like four characters on screen.
You're in the Millennium Falcon for a good chunk.
Yeah. For a really, I mean, obviously Star Wars is like this too. A New Hope is like this, but to a lesser degree, but like a really long portion of Empire, the only people on screen are Luke, Vader, Han, Leia,
Yoda.
And obviously, you know, the droids are there and Chewie's there and stuff, but those are basically like, we're really in their perspectives for huge chunks of the movie. And so when you build an anthology that's built around doing stories not from their perspectives, suddenly they're like, well, okay, so on Dagobah, who could you do? And there's like, you know, in For A New Hope, most of the scenes, just looking at any random scene in the movie, you say, okay, who are the side characters we could do? There's like 5 to 10 choices. Mm-hmm. In Empire Strikes Back, there are a lot of scenes, like the answer is zero. Like, you have to really think about it, you know, like so when we started to look at the film, we were like, how are we gonna get 40 stories out of this thing? But luckily we have amazing authors who are way smarter about this stuff than we are and have solved that problem. But the initial thought is like, oh boy, this is going to get a little challenging.
One of the things, I was going to bring this up later, but you know, one of the great things that, you know, Star Wars allows you to do, and full credit to, and I'm going to screw her name up, is it Nnedi Okorafor?
Nnedi Okorafor, yes. Yep. Dr. Nnedi Okorafor.
Wrote The Baptist, which is my favorite short story from the first book. And I mean, for a lot of reasons, it's just fantastic. But also, I mean, talk about grabbing something, you know, that takes you beyond characters. It is a character. She's a character, sorry. But beyond the obvious character, like people, right? So here's this thing that she made this incredible story out of. And one thing Empire does have is sort of like you have, you know, creatures and I mean, Dagobah alone, right? It's sort of like your cantina scene in a lot of ways, right? There's so many creatures in the background there. So is that, and then you've got Echo Base, which is just full of people in the background. But what's, you know, is that sort of one of the things that because of like stories like The Baptist, you guys were able to look at Empire? You're right, it's short on people on screen time, but it's also sort of pretty rich in background, you know, living things.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the great things about this being the second book is having done the first one and seeing some of the ways that the contributors to that first book really push the margins on like POVs and style and all sorts of things. We already went into the second book knowing, okay, this book can get weird and this book can get really weird and it'll be okay because we already know that stories like that can work. And in fact, end up being some of the more interesting perspectives. So if we go weird and if we really think not just outside the box, but think outside of the box. So that gives you the confidence when you start to think about that stuff and start to think about like what might someone pitch or what ideas might the authors come up with and thinking like, all right, even if it's not every scene is not like the cantina scene in A New Hope where it's just like, oh, you just pick that person and that person, and that person, and off you go. You have to get a little more creative about it and really think through it a bit more. It still gave us the confidence, like this is actually going to happen. It's just going to get really weird. But you know what? Star Wars is really at its best when it's weird. So Agreed. The fact that this anthology is going to get weird is cool, is awesome. It's like, it's part of the reason why something like this is worth doing.
One of the things I wondered was, do you have the authors pick from a list of characters and creatures and then they pitch the story idea, or is it on them completely?
It is pretty much on them completely. So okay. when we have an author that we would love to have contribute to this, we say we outline some basic rules. So there's a couple of basic rules. First rule is no main characters. So Han, Luke, Leia are out. Vader is basically out. There's that gray area of like, you know, for A New Hope, we have a story from Obi-Wan's point of view. Obi-Wan is arguably a main character. Actually, not arguably. Like, he is a main character in A New Hope, but we had a story from his point of view. So there's going to be those characters who fall into that gray area of, like, are they a main point of view? Are they not a main point of view? But really, it's Han, Luke, and Leia, and Vader are pretty much off limits because, you know, those characters, those are the stars of Star Wars. So most of Star Wars is through their POV. If this is meant to be from other POVs, we should be seeing how other characters and things see those characters. So you start with that basic rule. The other basic rule is the story needs to connect to a scene or moment in the movie in some way. So a great example that I'll give you is when we had the Aphra story in the first FACPOV, Kieran Gillen did the great Aphra story about Aphra being on Dantooine and just being unlucky in the way Aphra is, that the stormtroopers and the Imperials all show up while she's on Dantooine because they, even though they know it's probably, you know, not good intel, they got to go check it out anyway after Leia tells them the rebels are on Dantooine. A story like that works because there's that specific line in the film of they're on Dantooine. So you can have this moment where you cut to Dantooine and see the story. If that line wasn't there, we wouldn't have just like done a, hey, what's Aphra doing during A New Hope story? Right. It had to tie to like a line of dialogue, a scene, something. So that's the other sort of rule. It can be everything from a line of dialogue to a character to a scene to a reference. But as long as we can actually point to something in the movie and say, that's the thing this tethers to. That's the other rule. And then the last rule is we don't really have anyone who does the exact same character. So if somebody, Paul Dini in A New Hope chooses he wants to do Boba Fett story, okay, nobody else can do Boba Fett story. And realistically speaking, it's more or less a first come, first serve thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I'm sure there's a million different ways you could do it. You could be like, oh, five people want to do Boba Fett. All right, we'll pick a name out of the hat or something like that. Like, it's just the way that the project works. And it's just when people join on, we give them the run of doing whatever they want. pretty much. And we obviously help to guide them. We sometimes will have suggestions for stories that we think might be good, or we will, if an author is like, because, you know, if I said, hey, you could tell pretty much any story you want related to Empire Strikes Back, that's like kind of daunting, because it's like too many flavors of ice cream almost. Mm-hmm. So we'll often, you know, we'll have a conversation with an author and try to work through like, well, is there a scene you're really into? And we'll find a POV, or is there something? But we try to give pretty much carte blanche to everyone to tell the kinds of stories they want to tell, because that is how you end up with these amazing, incredible POVs that, to be honest, myself or anyone else on any of the teams involved in putting the book together couldn't have come up with our own. Like, there's no way any of us would have come up with the Baptist story, or if we would have, it would never have been to that. It never would have been in that way. Like, it would have been something completely different. And so we really lean on the creativity of the contributors to come up with just, you know, really incredible things.
Because you have probably more authors than you need for this, just for this book. And just to double back with Dr. Nieti, I was very upset she's not back, but I have a feeling we'll see her soon in Star Wars publishing at some point. But, you know, you've got so many to choose from, and about a third of the list are returnees. Mm-hmm. Did you guys, was that, could you have like filled, could you have done all 40 all first timers, or like, do you have that much of a working list?
I mean, I think we probably could have. I think it definitely was, so it was definitely an intentional choice of one of the most important parts of this series, the From a Certain Point of View series, since there's now two of them, is now a series, mm-hmm. Is that we get to use it as a platform to bring new voices into Star Wars.
Sure.
That was one of the most exciting things about doing it the first time, and it was something that when we talked about doing the second time, we were really excited about. It's another chance to bring a lot of new voices into Star Wars at one time. Because obviously, you know, between us and our friends at Disney Publishing and everyone else who does publishing, like, there are a good number of Star Wars books every year, but it's like not, you know, it's not a ton. So even if you were like only new voices to write Star Wars forever, the pace at which you would be able to bring new voices into Star Wars publishing is still pretty slow. Mm-hmm. So a project like this lets us start to do that on a larger scale faster, and get a lot of people, bring a lot more people into the galaxy who then hopefully later can contribute in larger ways if that's something that they want to do.
Right. I was going to say one of the benefits of this is your data mining too, I assume, right? I mean, you're seeing, you know, how people, what they put forth and how fans react to their stories. And I have to, you know, I have to assume that's there's some strategy involved here as well.
It is a good chance to give people a chance to write some Star Wars without obviously there's a shorter time commitment here, because we're not asking someone to put together, you know, a massive novel's worth of work. Right. It's a short story. But also, yeah, just to see if writing for Star Wars is something that they really are interested in. If it's something they, you know, it's like, oh, I wanted to write for Star Wars, I just want to do one story once and then that's great. Or if it's like, no, this is a career goal of mine to really be involved in Star Wars and writing. Yeah. But so to get back to like part of the original question you asked that I did not entirely get around to, it was,
there was a question.
I think, yeah. So it was intentional to make sure that at least a majority of the voices in this anthology were brand new. There were obviously some authors who were like, hey, I would love to do this again. And so for some of them, we were able to do that. You know, there wasn't like a real, and it, again, it's like a, it's not, it's a, it's an art, not a science. So it's not like, well, these five people, we're definitely going to have them write again, but not these five people, and these four, but not, it doesn't really work that way.
Right.
So we sort of balance between, but then it's also, you know, we also understand that, like, you know, people's lives and schedules and obligations make it such that not everyone that we ask is able to say yes. And so not everyone that we ask is able to make the commitment or wants to or is interested. And so there does come a point where, as the project is moving along, that we do need to make sure that we, you know, this is a project that we all want to make happen. So that is another reason why how you end up at the list you end up at. And it's not that we say like, oh, this person should be this person should be in and this person isn't. It's just, we just keep asking people and asking folks that we like working with or would love to work with until we have 40 people who say yes.
I assume you don't get any just like, no, like, no, I'm not interested. I assume if it's a no, it's because, like you said, schedule or something, other reasons, or do you just get,
I mean, sometimes you do. I mean, really? with anything, sometimes
tell you me who they are and we'll publicly shame them.
No. Sometimes you do. Sometimes people say, you know, you get a shorter answer as, you know, thanks for thinking of us, not interested. And
yep,
that's honestly, there's no harm or foul there.
Of course, that's not cool.
So
there's some that are like, you know, it's like some are like, duh, like, you know, Amy Ratcliffe, right? I mean, it just feels like she probably should have been in the first book. Who knows why she wasn't? Michael Koge, right? Another one, just been so much great work in Star Wars the last few years. So the great thing about this list that I love very much, and I assume this probably ties back into you, it's a real team that, you know, picks authors and is always on the lookout for authors. So just of the new authors, a few of them I've heard of and read their stuff. A few of them I've heard of, never read their stuff, and a few I've never heard of. I assume it's probably, there's some percentage of that for you as well, right? I mean, unless you have really spent the time to really research each author by yourself. What's that process like when somebody does say, hey, have you read Lydia Kang's Patient Zero? You guys should check it out. And is it what's the process there? So it's at least one person has to have had read the book and enjoy it, or are you guys just all trust each other so implicitly that it's just like, you say it's a good book, let's give her a call.
Yeah, so the nice thing about this is because it's such a collaborative environment, there's not just one person who's like the like sole arbiter of who gets to bring their voice to Star Wars. So across the team here at Del Rey and our partners and friends over at Lucasfilm, when we know we're doing this project, we all just start talking about the names of people that we have maybe been following because we read them on our own time, or they've been brought to our attention in some other environment or whatever. And we say, hey, you know, like, you know, I've been reading a ton of stuff that, you know, I've been reading a ton of like Seth Dickens and stuff. I think he'd be really great to see a Star Wars story from them. And this is the kind of stuff he's done. And so, this is why I think they'd be a great Star Wars author, which is not really any different than when we're thinking about like just overall for Star Wars books. Like, this is the same conversations we sort of have when we're trying to figure out who's going to write a particular novel or what, you know, what author we think is a fit for a particular project. It's on a larger scale because obviously a lot more than just trying to find one voice. And what's great is we get to leverage all of the collective knowledge and experience of a large group of people. So absolutely, there were some of these authors who I was only slightly familiar with or not really familiar with when we started to talk about them. But then the great thing is one of my colleagues or somebody will say, yeah, you know, I'd love this author to, this author would be a great person to participate, and here's the stuff they've written. And then we all kind of jump in and start to read some of their stuff and be like, oh, of course, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sign them up right this second. I can't wait to read a story from them. And that kind of happens across the way. Like, right. It just passes back and forth between everyone. Because we all have lists of like, I would love to work with this person on Star Wars in some capacity. Along with lists of like, these people would be amazing. Their voice, I need to hear their voice in Star Wars because their voice, we haven't seen it before. They just have an amazing perspective on a certain type of storytelling. So yeah, it's just a lot of like passing and trading names back and forth, kind of like just in a regular old book club sort of way. And then we start to just figure out which ones we actually want to ask and who we want to invite to the project. And then we just kind of keep going again until we fill the book.
Give me a name that you've been a fan of for a really long time and you're really excited that they're doing their first Star Wars project. And give me a name that you weren't as familiar with, but now that you've been introduced to their stuff, you're also very excited about. And understanding that you're excited about all of them, but
yes, yeah. I am excited about all persons and all people. So someone who definitely super excited about is R.F. Kuang, mm-hmm. who if folks are not familiar with their work, R.F. Kuang is the author of The Poppy War, couple of sequels to the Poppy War, including I believe it's The Dragon Republic, and oh gosh, I'm now a terrible person because I have blanked on the third book. Oh no, she's
gonna, okay,
she's gonna hate me. The Poppy War, The Dragon Republic, I believe it's The Burning God is the third book. Yes.
Look it up. Okay.
Yes, I am. I am correct. Hooray for me. Yes, The Burning God. It's an amazing trilogy, and she is an author who I have been aware of for a long time because I had read The Poppy War when it was a manuscript that was like out, just obviously out to various publishing houses. So I had been aware of The Poppy War and had kind of been following it once, in the way that like all editors and publishing people like within certain genres, like when a book makes the rounds through a lot of publishing houses and then someone ends up buying it, winning it at auction, whatever, everyone's sort of like, oh man, let me follow that book. Let me see where it ultimately ends up and everything. So I had been in kind of aware of her work for a really long time and thought she has just an amazing sensibility when it comes to writing. And so that was someone whose name I had written down for a really long time. So she's great, and absolutely people should totally read The Poppy War and its sequels if they haven't. Obviously, you know, Amy is someone, if you're part of the Star Wars community in any way, big or small, Amy Ratcliffe, like, you know, as just an amazing personality and someone who, again, has such an amazing grasp of talking about Star Wars in this way that brings people in rather than pushing people out, which is sometimes not a thing that everyone is able to do when they talk about Star Wars, because we all have the parts of Star Wars we really love or dig into. But Amy, even when she's talking about or examining a part of Star Wars that seems very personable to her or very close to her, it never makes you feel like you're being excluded if that thing like isn't your favorite thing or if that's something you're not aware of. She always just has this way of broadening the tent. And so super excited to have Amy part of it. I was not as familiar with Mark Oshiro's work before this, which is absolutely a shame on me because he's a phenomenal storyteller. But as soon as his name was brought up among the team, I started to dive into his work and was just like, why isn't this person writing a Star Wars story like right this second? Mm-hmm. Right now, like right now. I don't know. I don't care that he hasn't said yes yet. Like right now. So was super excited about it. Even more excited when he decided to choose the Wampa, which is one of the stories that's been revealed. So Mark is really great. And one of the things that I'm working on kind of on the side, I don't know when this is going to happen, but when I get a few minutes to put it together, I'm going to actually put together a thread of like, if you've never heard of these authors before, here is one or two of the works by those authors, not necessarily like these are the only works, but just here's right. A couple of the works by these authors that you should absolutely check out as we wait for November to roll around, because I'm hoping, as with the first book, that people not just find new voices in Star Wars that they're excited about and new stories to read, but hopefully new voices and authors beyond Star Wars who they're excited to follow and hopefully find some enlightening and entertaining stories for. So I'm going to do that for all of the contributors across the board.
Yeah, that's, like I said, one of the great things about the list is it's already had that effect on me. I've already sought out a couple of them who I'd never heard of. Just to familiarize myself with their work, and I've already placed an order on bookstore to a couple of their books. So that's like the great part of this is when you guys put these lists together, and you know, that's why I was so excited when I found out that it was going to be a majority of new first time authors. So I was like, oh great, that's going to just expand my worldview even further. One of the things, so talking about Mark, and you guys did release six, not titles, but sort of synopses about six of the short stories coming up. And that one definitely jumped out at me. That's just screams something I would enjoy. And the other one was the Naturalist Caring for Tauntauns.
Hank Green's.
Yeah. I can't wait for that one. I don't know why.
It's phenomenal.
Months ago, somebody was asking, well, what would you want to see from a short story? And I actually said, force sensitive. I was just stealing the Baptist. So it was Baptist, but a Tauntaun. It was a force sensitive female Tauntaun. But it looks like this one will have to do, and I'm very excited about it. And I will say that I was talking to Mr. Freed a couple of weeks ago, and he promised me weird. And I know he was like, he was so sure that people weren't even going to like it. It was so weird. He gave me zero details. And you've used that word a couple times just talking now and on Twitter too. So, is that, we'll kind of end maybe something on that. Is that one of the great things about this book is for you too? I mean, reading it, you had to read all 40 of them, I assume. Is that sort of the things that make this type of project stand out for you?
Yeah, it's not just like the overall idea of weird.
No. But weird is fun, right? Like you said, and like you've said already how much fun this project was, the first one, and how that just right away you guys were like, all right, we got to do more of this. This is like, this kind of fun and energy is addictive, right?
Exactly. And it's like the weird, like writ large, and yes, it translates to fun. And also it's just, you think about it, the short story form is by nature a little more more experimental than the full novel form, just because, you know, in time and length, you can just kind of do more. There are some concepts or formats for a short story that like work really well over like 2,000, 3,000, maybe even 5,000 words, but like across a full novel, like 80 to 100,000 words, maybe wouldn't work as well. It just like, maybe there's not enough story there, or just the particular way, the style that you're writing, the form just doesn't extend itself that long. But in a more condensed form, it's like beautiful and perfect. So you just get a chance to do that a lot more with the short stories. And so that's a way that we're able to, and the contributors are able to really push the types of stories we're telling. And, you know, you just look back, the best examples of that, you just look back at the first one and how many of those, like, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi telling a story about being dead like 5 seconds after he's dead, and, you know, someone else filing an incident report against Darth Vader, and then you're inside the head of, you know, in the Baptist, and then you also got a stormtrooper who's like filling out a report, and you've got a whole story from the point of view of the mouse droid, and you're basically getting like readouts from a droid. It's just, this type of project lets you do all of those types of crazy, weird, miraculous storytelling things that you might not be able to do in other places. And it lets you really accentuate just how incredible the breadth of storytelling possibilities across Star Wars is, because there are so many of these types of characters and POVs and styles that they all are so different. And from page to page, it's a completely different experience, but they all still feel so intrinsically Star Wars, which is just this kind of awesome thing that you get to show off, how malleable Star Wars storytelling can be while still feeling comfortable and still feeling like something that you know, and something you know, even if it's something you've never really experienced before, it's a form you've never experienced, still feels like Star Wars, and it still feels like The Empire Strikes Back, even though it's super different and weird.
That's a really great, I couldn't agree more, and a great spot to end it. I was going to ask you if you'd started on, from a certain point of view, Return of the Jedi yet, but you probably kind of already answered that before. It's never ending. It's never beginning. Never, and no beginning, no ending, right?
I will tell you that there may have been an author or two who has already been like, hey, for Return of the Jedi, I will do this for you. And I'm like, we don't, I'm the Excel spreadsheet I'm working in right now for Empire Strikes Back, because yes, this book requires an Excel spreadsheet, is already a mess enough. We are not down the road to thinking about.
Give me a couple of weeks at least, would you? Yeah. Are we sticking to the 40th anniversary thing too? I mean, because at that rate, I won't be alive to see, from a certain point of view, The Force Awakens. I don't think so.
I mean, I won't. That won't be my problem either. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe, I don't know. Obviously, last year was the 20th anniversary of The Phantom Menace. We didn't do one of these kinds of things for that. So, you know, but I mean, it's sort of like always in motion is the future. I know that we use that a lot, but I think I feel confident enough in saying that for A New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi, we've sort of gotten to this cadence that if we're going to do Return of the Jedi, we'll wait for the 40th anniversary of that. Right. You know, if these sorts of things end up being the kinds of things that people love, which it really sounds like people do, like people seem to get very excited about them, and the receptions to the first one and this one thus far have been great, you know, there's certainly, we're always happy to entertain creative ideas and ways to do projects like this for other things. Whether or not those end up happening, we won't know until they do.
Sure.
So I think at least for this one, and if we end up doing Return of the Jedi to at least close out this trilogy, it'll be keyed to the 40th anniversary.
People love these so much, the first one so much, and they're so excited about this one. And for sure, Return will be just as popular. I think you would be forgiven if you, you know, just kept going every 2-3 years. You know what I mean? I think you would certainly be forgiven just because people love these so
also,
much.
Also, like 40 is kind of the upper limit of stories. Like, hey, right. It's just, there's a lot that goes, there's just like a lot of work and a lot of stories to read and a lot of things to line up. I can't imagine someone being like, hey, for the 50th anniversary, let's do it all again with 50 stories.
That's also a lot of autographs to get.
Listen, as far as I know, there is still no one who has gotten all 43 contributor autographs from the first book.
Right.
I remain open to, if someone can do it, that I will provide some sort of cool Star Wars book related gift to the first person who can prove that they have a copy that's signed by all 43 contributors.
I feel like Pablo would be the hardest one to get.
No, he's not, because Pablo, remember that, yeah. There was the New York, we did that special event at New York Comic Con.
Right.
And we had that giant panel with like 16 or 17 of the contributors, and people who came to that panel actually got a special edition of the book that all of the contributors at that panel, which Pablo so graciously hosted for us, signed. And so Pablo's signature is among a group of them that's actually really, if you were able to get that,
if you were there,
you already got a head start.
Right.
Some of the harder ones is there are obviously a few folks who are not based in the United States, which, you know, given that, you know, majority of the folks who probably have this book are based in the United States. So that represents a challenge, particularly right now, since you can't go to a convention and you can't really travel that much.
Right.
And then there are the other challenging ones is there are some people who are not authors who are as sort of public available as authors who, again, go to conventions a lot, or they publish a lot of books, and so you'll see them at a lot of events. So I think there's a kind of small cadre of about 6 to 8 of the authors who I think would be a little more challenging to get than someone like, you know, our friend Jason Fry, who does a lot of publishing across a lot of different events. You can find him at conventions all the time. It's sort of a more accessible person, you know, like some of the other authors fall into.
Well, that's good. That's, yeah, you hear that, everybody? If you can complete the cycle, then
yes. I'm gonna extend the offer.
You will get a job at Delray.
I will extend the offer to the second book. If someone comes up with the total contributors for this book, I will figure out a prize. I don't know what the prize is. This is just me coming up with some idea for a prize. I will figure it out. I haven't had to figure it out. That's why, it's because no one's
done. Right. You're just so right. It's a tall order. And
I don't know.
Short of some sort of authentication process too, I don't know. But geez, they all look like your handwriting.
You know? I know. I'll have to signature match and everything like that.
Anyways, all right. Well, November 10th. You can pre-order it now from a certain point of view. The Empire Strikes Back. The cover art is great. I didn't even know. Who did the cover art? Same as
The cover art is the same as the first book, and I have the first book right next to me because, you know, I've had to reference it one or two times in the past.
Will Stahl.
Yes. So I believe that is Will's work.
Great. Obviously, you know. Geez, a pretty, you know, that moment, you know, particular moment in Empire and in all of Star Wars is of course pretty recognizable to most people. So great choice, great cover. Can't wait to see the cover adorned with all the authors' names.
It was between that. I think we had a version, and if it may be sitting around somewhere. I think the other version was we considered something related to Hoth, because when you think about the two iconic moments, obviously you could have Vader and Luke by themselves, but again, if the stories aren't from Vader's and Luke's point of view, that sort of doesn't make sense to have them on the cover. The other idea was something related to the Battle of Hoth with the
Northridge,
the speeders, the AT-ATs, the soldiers. Yep. That was kind of the back and forth. But
yeah, that would, I mean, yeah, both would hit the mark for sure. But, you know, just with Dagobah and Yoda explaining what the Force is, pretty important moment. And I think it was the right choice. So, all right, November 10th, from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back, order it. You can pre-order it now, wherever you pre-order your books. I guess you're not allowed to say when we're going to find out the 40th.
You know, I think it'll be in pretty, I think it won't be too long from now. I can't give you an exact moment or date because, you know, subject to change.
Understood.
But it's not going to be like, this is not, we're not going to be like holding a name or holding something for like months and months. Okay. And I'm sure down the line, again, I don't know exactly when, but I'm sure down the line that we'll have some audio narrators to talk about.
Right.
Are 40 stories that need brilliant audio narrators. So we'll find time for that. And we're going to have a moment again, we'll reveal all the stories at some point. Like, you know, we're going to
titles and stories and
yeah, there's going to be a lot of fun to come because this project is just too fun not to talk about. So, you know, and we have time till November 10th, so everyone stay tuned. There's going to be just so much more great stuff related to the book.
Awesome, awesome. And you guys have already, I mean, there's some, you guys have some great, your years for Star Wars is just getting going, really. I mean, as of this recording, we've got a week to go till Shadowfall comes out. And then you just keep going from there. So, Tom, I can't thank you enough, sir. I appreciate it.
Sure, anytime.
Please enjoy the rest of your day, whatever you're up to. And maybe when we have down the road, when we've got the full list and all the short stories or the titles and synopses, we'll connect again and we'll talk. And I'm certainly going to try and reach out and grab some authors and get them on the show as well. So let's touch base down the road.
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, thanks to Tom for chatting with us. Like many of you, I really enjoyed Star Wars from a certain point of view. I can't wait for this new book to come out. November just seems way too far away for me at this point. Make sure you head over to CineLinks.com to hear more podcasts and news about all the stuff we love, movies, gaming, books, you name it. But until next time, bye for now.
It's time to go now.